freedom from grinding, poverty and hunger is a human right, not merely a question of compassion. That was the message of the UN's High Commissioner for Human Rights, Louise Arbour, for the International Human Rights Day, marked each year on December the 10th. The complex causes of poverty, she said, range from exclusion and discrimination to a skewed international trade system. Yet despite awareness of these problems, our approach to poverty reduction is often tinged with appeals to charity or altruism. All countries, she stressed, independent of national wealth, can take immediate measures to fight poverty by ending discrimination against women and minorities and promoting good governance and respect for the rule of law. Global leaders, she said, have recognised that development, peace and security and human rights depend on each other. Yet in today's world, one in every seven people continues to live in chronic hunger. And even the most optimistic assessments show that most poor countries are unlikely to achieve any of the Millennium Development Goals drawn up by world leaders 6 years ago.
I think we have to start with one fact, that most of the African countries south of the Sahara will not meet any of the Millennium Development Goals.
Archbishop Silvano Tomasi is the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva.
I think that's a kind of red light of alarm that should make us reflect why in Africa and in other continents there is this reality of extreme poverty or simple poverty, because 1 billion people live with less than $1 a day and 2 billion people live with less than $2 a day. So there is a huge gap between rich and poor in the world still now, notwithstanding enormous efforts made in terms of direct aid for development, giving cash for development to some governments, and also some transfer of technology and know-how. So some of us are looking at this panorama around the world and the data that are provided by the agencies of the United Nations, because some of the most interesting information is given to us by the UN Commission for Trade and Development, or by the World Bank that is somehow related to the United Nations. And on the basis of the very information provided by these agencies, we can see that there has been some kind of a failure in bringing out of poverty most of the world. Now, it's interesting that through the process of liberalization of trade and the globalization of the markets, in the last few years, some 300 million people, especially in China and India, have been moved out. They have graduated, so to say, out of poverty into a more acceptable lifestyle. But what is that compared to the huge numbers that are still in poverty? I think it's a positive achievement that probably points out the road we need to follow in order to help other people to get out of poverty.
Let's look at that road. What is it that has been achieved in these countries that isn't being achieved in Africa?
I'm not an economist, but from listening carefully to what the ambassadors from the developing countries are saying, to what they have to say, and reading the information that is provided by the different agencies of the UN system, and trying to really also reflect on my own experience in Africa and in some other countries, I think that we can kind of highlight certain priorities. One is that in the countries that are moving forward in the improvement of their economy, there is a core base of people well-educated, so that in today's world that is very much depending on knowledge-based economy, the requirement of education is very fundamental. So where there has been work for some years on educating people, taking them out of illiteracy, then this has created like enough of a base from where to take off, to have qualified workers, to have reliable people, to have persons that can handle simple technology and so forth. A second observation is that the family structure is also a very important element in the economy. For example, in Asia, for all the criticism that may be labeled against some of the countries for whatever political approach they adopt, the family structure is pretty much a solid, normal kind of functioning unit of society that creates dependence in the sense that people can depend on this kind of structure. And second, that it's a reliable point of reference in case of emergency, so that it's a joint venture in addressing economic achievement, so people can work very hard, long hours, and they are supported by the family structure. So that's another interesting angle. And then there has been an opening of the market. I think we have to consider and accept this fact as an important dimension of economic progress. China, for example, in the last 20 years has decided to become part of the world network of trade. It opened its markets to investment from outside, with certain controls, to be sure, but it's an opening. And in this way, we have seen that all along the eastern coast of China, there has been an incredible progress. However, there is a caveat. There is a caution that needs to be introduced. In China, 300-400 million people enjoy a very good life. They are a part of this boom of the market. But then we have probably another 600 million people who are in the backwaters of China that have still a lifestyle that is very much without some basic assistance in terms of health, education, and so forth. So we need to balance these things. But as part of the important ingredients for a movement forward to uplift people out of poverty, I think the opening of the liberalization of markets is very essential. On the other hand, you know, globalization and liberalization of markets is not enough in itself. I think we need some rules and some fairness so that the results of the increased wealth obtained through this kind of process, the result may be a more even spreading of the benefits. Otherwise, we have a Wild West kind of economy where you have an objective increase in wealth, but you don't have more people participating in this benefit and having their lifestyle improved.
The church has long been concerned with promoting global solidarity alongside a globalization of the markets, urging wealthy nations to give more generous development aid and promote a fairer system of international trade. Yet despite debt relief and an increase in aid to the poorest nations, many of these countries are simply not seeing improved living conditions for the majority of their people. Archbishop Tomasi says it's vital to address problems of corruption and wastage in both donor and recipient countries.
Last year, the international community gave $50 billion for development, one way or the other. $20 billion went to consultants. So there is something that does not click right away. But I think there is a lot of goodwill in some countries to bring their contribution for development up to 0.7% as they had committed themselves some time ago. Not many countries have reached that goal, but there is a movement upward in terms of the percentages contributed. And this is a component that is necessary because some of the poor countries need cash and need this kind of assistance in order to move forward. To make this direct contribution, be it in cash or be it in technology or know-how forms, you need to have a counterpart. We must also look at the other side of the medal. Corruption is a choker of development, and it stifles possibilities of growth in many poor countries. And we need to talk more about it. We need to address this issue in a more forceful way. Also because some of the money that is lining the pockets of some leaders or some corrupt figures ends up in Europe, and it ends up in the banks that are quietly supporting a system without obviously explicitly planning to do this, but are supporting a system that is against development. So we need to work at the point of arrival of the help that is given.
Greater transparency.
Fighting corruption, greater transparency, facilitating private property. I know in some countries there is still a reluctance to give ownership of the land to the people or to make them at least secure enough in their piece of land that they are managing to stimulate creativity and to encourage them to produce more, to save, and to begin to generate an economic system that begins to function. So we need to balance things. And at the same time, we need to examine on the part of the rich countries all the pledges that have been made along the years to cancel debt, to contribute more in a more organized and a more coordinated way, assistance for development, to coordinate also in terms of the relationship between what international agencies are doing and individual states are doing. So there must be a convergence, so not that one ignores what the other is doing, or sometimes funding the same project or creating this type of confusion.
Money being wasted, in other words.
There is a need to create a tighter dialogue between the people and the donors so that the priorities are determined by the receiving people and the donors can control.
Thanks there to Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva.